wished they were a little more experienced in these things and so had not become bewildered immediately upon seeing this heightened type of loving exchange. So they were conscious enough to run after them and drag them back before Krishna saw them and realized that something was wrong, that he wasn't really in Vrindavan. So they grabbed them and dragged them back. So fortunately, the cows were real. So Krishna went herding the cows, and then in the distance he saw the sea. And he thought, ah, the river Yamuna. How nice. We will take the cows there. So he called out to all the cowherd boys, come, let us go to the river Yamuna. They remained motionless, but he and the cows, they moved down towards the sea. Suddenly, as he approached the sea, Krishna saw big waves. Then he looked around the corner and he saw the city of Dwarka. His normal consciousness began to return, but not completely yet. He became surprised and was saying to himself, where am I? What has happened? So then Lord Balaram came and brought Krishna slowly back to his normal consciousness. Lord Balaram told Krishna, he's still halfway or somewhere in between. Lord Balaram said, actually, my dear brother, you have descended because you have a mission. You have to kill so many demons. Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to perform a sacrifice. But before he can do that, you have to help him defeat his enemies, like Shalva. Krishna, halfway in between, Krishna said, oh, I will certainly kill that foolish Shalva. What can he do to me? But then he looked around and he started remembering more clearly. And he remembered that I was sleeping, but before I slept, I was the prince in Dwarka. But now somehow I'm dressed as a cowherd boy. So he became doubtful, still somewhere in between in his consciousness, but just doubtful. And he was thinking, what? Again and again thinking, what has happened? What has happened? And as he was thinking, he was laughing to himself. So then Lord Balaram explained everything. What was the plan of Lord Brahma? Why? And everything like that. Then he bathed Krishna in the sea, took away the dust of the cow herding, and Garuda came and took them both back to the palace. So now they're back in the palace. Krishna understands what the situation has been. Most amazing situation. So then the scene switches back to the palace. So Krishna wants to explain about these things to the queens, because the queens, they're very exalted devotees and they're also in the mood of conjugal love. But he wants to help them to appreciate what the devotees in Vrindavan are like, and particularly what the gopis of Vrindavan are like, to help them to advance in Krishna consciousness, actually. So Uddhava, when they got back in the palace, Uddhava brought all the queens. Devaki, understanding this was going to be a very confidential discussion about conjugal love in Vrindavan, she went to prepare lunch. So all the queens were there except Satyabhama. Krishna asked Uddhava, where is Satyabhama? So then Uddhava explained. He explained that all of the queens, they all saw everything there in Navavrindavan. So they've all become inspired by the exchanges that you were having with Radharani, even in her statue form. They become so inspired. But on the way back, Padmavati started speaking in a very insulting way. She said, oh, you fool Rukmini, and you stupid Satyabhama. Ha! I think you had better worship these Abhira women. Abhira, they are nomadic, very low class, tribal types. They're referred to in that famous verse, Kirata Hunandra Abhira Pulkasha. That verse? Pulinda Pulkasha. How does it go? Anyway, I think you know the verse. Second canto. Pulkasha. Abhira Shumba Yavana Kasadaya. These are the very degraded people, and it is being said there in Srimad Bhagavatam that even these people can become purified through devotional service. So Padmavati starts insulting the queens, saying, oh, you foolish women, why don't you go and worship these Abhira women? Maybe that'll help you. So in this way, maybe you can win the favor of Krishna. But then Devaki spoke up, supporting the actual position of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, saying that even though I became the mother of Krishna and Vasudev, my husband, became the father, but still, we are not on the same level as Nanda and Yashoda. All that happened was that he took birth from us, but then immediately he went to them and he stayed with them through his childhood years, the best years. So they really got the mercy. They really got the good fortune, because actually they are greater than me and my husband. These people are the greatest devotees because of their exceptional devotional service. They had the good fortune to raise the Lord through his childhood. Therefore, they are worthy of the special love that the Lord has for them. So Padmavati was silenced by that. And that's the last that she says, I think. Fortunately, perhaps. Then Rukmini spoke, glorifying the gopis. She says, it is fitting that the gopis are more dear to Krishna than we are. And they're getting more mercy. Because they gave up everything. They gave up their family, their families. They gave up their friends. They gave up their hopes for elevation in their next lifetimes or even in this lifetime. They gave up all of that. But look at us. We are practically model householders. We're surrounded by our children and comfortable facilities and our parents and so much opulence. But they gave all those things up just so they could serve Krishna and associate with Krishna in the most intimate way and the way which pleased him the most. So they are greater than us. They're much greater than us. So they deserve his special care and his special affection. So everyone agreed except Satyabhama. She got into a huff and went away, not happy to hear this. Apparently not happy. Of course, actually, Satyabhama, she's a very great soul. And it's a transcendental mood, special transcendental mood. So then Lord Krishna, he decided, all right, now is the time to instruct my wives about the position of the gopis in Vrindavan, about Vrindavan in general, actually, but most particularly about the gopis in Vrindavan. So he looked to see if they were all there, but he saw Satyabhama was not there. So he sent someone saying, bring that foolish daughter of King Satrajit. Everyone knows that Satrajit, he really sort of blew it very badly. He became attached to wealth even though he was living there. And he was related with Krishna, but still, he couldn't really become attached to Krishna properly. So Krishna is in an angry mood. He refers to Satyabhama as Satrajiti, the daughter of Satrajit, just to remind her, just to kind of curb her false ego, transcendental false ego or something like that, to curb that a bit. So he ordered, bring the daughter of that foolish king. Satyabhama, more than the other queens, enjoys quarreling with Krishna. The reason is because she knows that he enjoys sort of talking his queens down from being, you know, angry and disturbed with him back to a normal level. In fact, calming the anger of his wives is one of his favorite diversions. So we should know that she is not trying to be difficult, but she is trying to give him pleasure, actually. So Krishna then, she came and he told her, you weak-minded Satrajiti, and angrily told her that you're acting like that time when I stole the Parijata tree from Indra and gave it to Rukmini. At that time, Satyabhama also became transcendentally angry. And Krishna, isn't it that Krishna had to get a Parijata tree for her too? Or something like that. Yes. So he told her that you're acting like that time. But now you are angry at my love for the inhabitants of Vrindavan. This is very bad. She had never seen him angry like that before. So she thought, maybe he is actually angry at me, and she became fearful. Have I offended Krishna? So Krishna then explains very nicely about the love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Don't you know that I'm ruled by their desires? If they thought I should renounce everything, then I promise I would do it immediately. Krishna explains how the inhabitants of Vrindavan feel about him, how intimate their connection is. Let me just read what he says. Just by seeing me, they become so dazed and bewildered by ecstasies from deep within that they fail to recognize their own bodies and everything that has to do with their bodies, and what to speak of the external objects of this world. So their pain won't be calmed, even if they... Wait a minute. Sorry. Hare Krishna. I just got a little step ahead. Okay, let us just take a step back. Krishna is telling Satyabhama, doesn't she know that he is ruled by the desires of the Brijvasis? He would renounce everything. He promises he'd do that immediately if they wanted to him to. Then he refers to the beautiful prayer of Lord Brahma. Brahma says, my mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you shower upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. This is just after he has witnessed that whole, or gone through that whole experience of the Brahma Vimohana Lila. You've already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, bodies, children, dear relations, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? So Krishna explains like this how the inhabitants of Vrindavan they are so deeply attached to him, overwhelmingly attached. He says, though, even if I returned, it wouldn't help. This is a very crucial part of the narration. Krishna is now going to explain why he has not returned and why he does not intend returning. So this is where the part I started reading comes from. Just by seeing me, they become so dazed and bewildered by ecstasies from deep within that they fail to recognize their own bodies and everything that has to do with their bodies, and what to speak of the external objects of the world. So their pain won't be calmed, even if they see me. Because when they see him, they become so bewildered. They just lose contact with everything. Their hearts, when they meet me, if they meet me, their hearts will be so disturbed by thoughts of separation from me that whatever measures I take for their happiness will only double their grief. But when they cannot see me, they become so torn that the fire of separation leaves them sometimes as though dead and sometimes as though insane. Thus, they partake of the nectar of wonderful ecstasies. If they see a patch of darkness resembling my complexion, they embrace and kiss it, mistaking it for me. What more can I describe? Therefore, my staying with them would be equal to my absence. Realizing this, I have not returned there. So this is very special. consideration. Krishna is worried. If he goes back there, he is going to make them feel worse. Because while they're in separation, they're in anxiety. When will we see him again? When they see him again, they become so bewildered. They don't know what is happening at all. And then again they get into anxiety that he's going to leave us soon. But now it is more anxiety. So better let them stay like that without increasing their anxiety. Krishna says, this is what why I have not returned there. And he says, actually my staying here or being there, it's all equal really. So then Krishna explains the real reason why he married the queens. Krishna explains that when I first came to Mathura, I didn't want to marry. But then later, I got a letter from Rukmini. And in that letter, she was pleading with me, please rescue me from being married to this Shishupal. This is intolerable. So please rescue me. And she told me, if you don't, I will commit suicide. So Krishna said, from that letter I could understand that she was sincerely attached to me. And I felt duty bound to rescue her. So Krishna rescued her. But when Krishna saw her, Krishna felt that her beauty mildly resembled that of the gopis, so mildly reminded him of the gopis. Therefore, his feelings of separation from the gopis were increased. That fire of separation in his heart was increased. So he thought, when he heard about the 16,100 princesses who had been kidnapped, and he went there and saw them, then he saw that they also mildly resembled the gopis. So Krishna thought, so that my feelings of separation from the gopis do not just burn me to ashes, I think I'll marry these girls and my feelings of separation will be a little bit reduced, and maybe I'll be able to tolerate the separation. So the queens, being great devotees, they didn't mind that. Actually, they thought it was quite nice, because they were appreciating now the gopis in Vrindavan, gradually more and more appreciating the gopis in Vrindavan. So they felt it is not bad to be like second-rate substitutes for the gopis. So then Krishna explains, he describes his own experiences in Vrindavan and how he cannot experience that now in Dwarka. So he says, ah, willful woman, please understand. All that I relished in Vraja gave me the highest pleasure. And though the glory of those times has now abandoned me, it still resides in that most worthy place. So I have changed, my situation has changed, but that place has not changed and those people have not changed. When submerged in the waves of that ocean of ecstasy, enjoying the ever-fresh, charming pastimes of Vraja, I was so attracted to each of the all-enchanting residents of Vraja that I never noticed the passing of the nights and days. I was so absorbed in this ocean of happiness that having to talk to such demigods as Lord Brahma and watch them offer me prayers and homage seemed to me a painful disturbance. I forgot the work that I had to do for the demigods. So Krishna explains at some length that when he had to fight with the demons, it was no problem. It was just like play. It was wonderful. Lifting up Govardhan Hill, it was wonderful. And the whole universe became overwhelmed by his beauty, his flute playing, and everything about him. So what about the inhabitants of Vrindavan? How did they become overwhelmed? That is something completely inconceivable. He said, everything and everyone obtained a state that was opposite. In other words, the people, the living entities, became stunned. The rivers and mountains started moving. Everything attained a state that was opposite because of being exposed to his beauty, his charm, his pastimes, and his flute playing. And what an experience. So now he says, Krishna says, that I have tried to arouse the same emotions in you folks, in you people of Dwarka, but I have failed. Whether I've joked or whatever pastimes I've performed, even though I've tried to perform pastimes which were as funny as I could imagine, I couldn't get you to come up to the same level of feeling. I couldn't do it. I found it too hard to break the jealous pride of the queens. He says, so now I've set aside my flute. I've become too embarrassed. I don't want to try to play it in case they laugh at me, or you, he's speaking to the queens, in case you laugh at me. So the whole experience and the people and the ecstasy and everything, Krishna says, it seems so far away from me now that I can no longer even talk about it. But he says an interesting thing. There is only one person who's going to be able to describe these topics later. That will be Shukadev. He's going to be able to describe these things. But he says, for myself, I've lost the ability now. I can no longer even speak about it. So, Uddhava starts getting into anxiety, seeing that Krishna appears to be going back into that trance-like state of just losing himself in the ecstasy of separation and going into that state of madness and just becoming incapacitated. So Uddhava, being very clever, he quickly makes some gesture to the queens. Do something. Change the subject. Do something, do anything, but stop him. Don't let him go back into that state. So the queens start throwing themselves at